Welcome to the Humanities Professionals Podcast, conversations hosted by Micah Olsey, a historian of philosophy, culture, music, and the arts. Micah sits down with thought leaders and creatives from across the country, asking what value the study of the humanities brings to their lives and what edge it brings to their work. Beyond that, the conversations include advice to artists and young scholars trying to earn a living or navigate the job market. Enjoy the show.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Welcome to the Humanities Professionals Podcast. And it's me, Micah. Thanks so much for listening in. Today we have a very special guest, someone I'm excited to have on this show. Hisa Abe is an art gallerist and manager at an art gallery in New York City called Tyler Rowlands Fine Art Gallery. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm here in the gallery, which is really exciting. Let me finish introducing Hisa and then we'll talk about that. The gallery Tyler Rowlands is located in the Chelsea Art District, which is home to some of the top art galleries showing some of the best contemporary artists from around the world. So this is a special place that we're at. Hisa has a background in the humanities. She studied art history and Asian studies as an undergraduate. And then she went on and received a master's degree in contemporary art at New York City's Sotheby's Institute of Art. Hopefully we'll hear a little bit more about that right now. And with that background, she has held multiple positions in galleries around New York City. And we're going to learn some about the very diverse projects that she's been involved with. So with those words, Hisa, welcome
to
the podcast.
Thanks. I'm excited.
How are you doing? You doing good?
Good, yeah.
Okay, great. I'd like to get started just by asking a little bit of context, and just this is a chance for me to get to know you a little bit better as well.
Sure.
So tell me a little bit about your life story, maybe especially touching on education, and then a couple of neat projects that have been along the way, and then what do you do here at Tyler Rowlands?
Okay, yeah. So as you mentioned, I did my undergrad art history major at Bates College in Lewiston, Maine. I actually came to New York because I wanted to work in the arts. I just didn't know what exactly I wanted to do. So I figured doing a sort of more hands-on kind of practical program at the Sotheby's Institute would be the best way to continue my education. So I came here. It was about a year and a half program. I wrote a thesis about actually Japanese contemporary art, which was my main sort of interest. And then I just started interning at every place I could possibly get an internship at. It was around when the market crashed, so every gallery was kind of not really hiring entry-level positions. So internships were kind of the only real option for
early
work.
So you did a lot of work for free?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I was working, I want to say, 6 to 7 days a week, honestly, at 5 different internships, because I really wanted to learn what I wanted to do full-time as my paid job coming out of school. So
that's amazing.
And I really wanted to narrow it down. So I did a little bit of everything. I did a nonprofit. I did Asia Contemporary Art Week at Asia Society.
Wait, say that again?
Asia Contemporary Art Week. So they hold an event where they bring together museums and galleries and talks and everything. It's evolved since I was there. And I can get into this a little bit more, but the director actually was curating a show at Tyler's years later. And that's kind of how I got this job. But that was one internship I did. I was also interning at a Lower East Side gallery. It was kind of before it became the new hip place to be. But I just wanted to give that a shot. And then I did an Upper East Side gallery that was a little bit more traditional. They were doing traditional Japanese arts. And then I also did a part-time position in Chelsea, and that was what turned into my first full-time role.
Oh my God.
Actually.
All right, so I'm hearing two things here. One, I'm hearing that you did a lot to have an understanding of what you liked.
Yeah.
Right? And then also, doing a lot allowed you to have relationships and connections.
Definitely.
Which helped you get the position you have now. And the third thing is that you did a lot in order to learn as much as possible.
Yes.
What are some, is there anything that you, I don't know, some things, tangible things you can latch on to that you really learned just doing this internship work?
I mean, every single job was a little bit of everything.
Okay.
Some of the more specific roles, I did do another internship at a, it was an artist studio.
Okay.
And they just needed someone to do kind of assisting with the grant writing because they were looking for money for a project. So that was really specific. And I did kind of, I realized that I didn't necessarily want to be doing nonprofit work, which was...
Can you say why? Is that allowed? Yeah,
I mean, a lot of the work was kind of asking for money, okay. Trying to raise money. Right. And I really felt like I needed to fully be kind of like behind that, you know, the goals and everything. And I, at the time, I was definitely more interested in trying to do a more sales type role at a okay. for-profit gallery.
Okay.
And I was already sort of gravitating in that direction with the other internships. So, and then this full-time position at a small gallery on 25th Street opened up, and it just sort of naturally happened that it was kind of the most interesting job that okay. I had, and then it became a paid position. So
I like that, because sometimes when we're exploring what it is that we like, you say, oh man, I don't know. Do I like this? What do I do? And it's neat to see that you kind of were able to find multiple places and then find, oh, this fits. This is a nice fit. It feels good.
Right. Yeah.
And it's a paying position.
Yeah. Which I think is also, it's important. And I think also just your passion comes out probably in your work. And I mean, the fact that it turned into a paid position could have been luck, or it could have also been the fact that, you know, I probably, not that I tried harder, but maybe right. I just like felt more interest in that.
Yeah. Your interests field. Align with your work. And then there's like a spark that comes. Yeah. You can see that spark. And then
right,
it's like,
right.
We need you here to stay.
Yeah.
Perfect. So that kind of brings us almost to the present, but tell us, what is a day in the life look like here at the gallery.
At
Tyler Rollins, and I know you just came back from a big trip, so you can either, maybe you can tell us both.
Yeah.
Maybe, what's it look like in the gallery here? What you do specifically? What's exciting about it? What's boring about it?
Sure.
And then the trip too.
The gallery, because we're a small gallery, there's actually only three of us here full time,
okay.
including the owner director. So it's really a little bit of everything every day. It might honestly be putting screws in the wall to hang up a piece of artwork. But my main role here is really the sales side, and kind of like online and marketing. And, so day to day, there's a lot of kind of upkeep of the website and sending right. out information to collectors and museums. And also keeping up with our art fair participation, which is where we met actually
right.
in Miami when we were doing Art Basel Miami. And we also did just come back from Art Basel Hong Kong. But all of that takes at least, I would say, a year to prep for. So yeah, and it's just a lot of communicating with our artists and making sure that they're on track for ship, whether it's like making the work or shipping. And so there's a lot to be managing at this all at the same time.
Yes, yeah, so you're doing actual artwork stuff here at the gallery, mm-hmm. installations and showing, but then you have the whole kind of the business side of selling, and then you have this third thing is expositions abroad, doing all the organization
right.
admin work in order to make
yeah.
make Miami Basel happen.
Yeah. So a lot of people think that it's sort of sitting at a gallery waiting for people to come in,
right.
but in actuality, there's a lot more sort of behind the scenes work that's happening.
This is great. This reminds me, I used to work in a magic shop.
Oh my
gosh. And you know, every Saturday morning, you know, kids would come in front and
yeah.
want to see me like do tricks, like make, you know, doves fly and things. But most of the work was actually like behind the scenes selling
yep.
to David Copperfield in Las
yeah,
Vegas
yeah,
or whatever,
right.
you know, and just shipping things in boxes.
Yeah.
Right. So you have all these other things behind
right.
the scenes.
People don't know that there's actually okay. other things than just like a retail store, basically.
But Basel, I mean, the trips are like really
the
fun.
Trips are
I
amazing.
Imagine.
I
do you have any time to see the city? Did you even see Miami at all, or were you just
in
the convention center?
I mean, a little bit. I would say there's a lot of good food that I get to eat. And I do have friends, so I can sort of visit with them. They'll take me around and do a quick sort of
right.
tour. But that was actually, I think, my fifth year there with Tyler. So I don't really get to see as much as I want.
But a little bit.
But every time I try to do a little bit more. Yeah, yeah. And Hong Kong, same thing. This was our fourth year doing it.
Wow.
So, I've been to Hong Kong several times, but still feel like I don't know the city very well, which
is
kind of sad, but yeah, but that's probably the best part of the job. The travel has been amazing.
Okay.
We've done other fairs. This year was Hong Kong, but last year we did Art Brussels for the first time.
Oh, okay.
And we also in the past have done Art Dubai. So I've been to Dubai a couple times
what?
With Tyler. Yeah. We did, because of the Venice Biennale and some of our artists being a part of it, we did the Venice Biennale last year for the opening. And we're there for a few days.
I've been there
a while ago. The travel has definitely been really, really amazing.
Wow. Okay, that's good. I had a great idea and then I lost my train.
Do you want me to talk about some of the worst things or should I not go there?
Tell us the worst things.
I think it's sort of related to travel, but our artists all live and work in Asia.
Okay.
So I think it's been a real challenge to stay on top of timing and, you know, getting them to respond and making sure that shipping arrangements are made well in advance. And
Right. There
are a lot of things that actually they're also not able to get there in Southeast Asia. And so we end up having to provide it either for them or they send us some...
You mean like materials?
Difficult. Yeah. Like if it's an installation that has moving parts, sometimes we've had some issues with, you know, technical difficulties because they're not able to get better parts. So that's been a real challenge, I think. And honestly, it's nice because we have my registrar here is great and she's able to handle most of the technical things. But
I never in my life would have imagined that, the gallerist artist relationship is also about supplies.
Oh, yes. It comes down to the details. Yeah.
For the motor for my installation.
Yeah. Little details. And then when you're selling that to a museum, you have to, make sure that you're giving them everything in good order. So.
Right. Totally.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So they're not going to install it in breaks. Okay, that's a perfect transition to this question about the relationship between your undergraduate degree, or at least something that you remember from, from the university, and how it affects and how the humanities background, works and impacts your life and your work here.
I went to a small liberal arts school, and they did have a general education requirement. Honestly, I think it's just my art history background is just as important as everything else I studied at college. Asian studies actually was a minor and it kind of came about because of classes I was just taking because I was interested. And that was anything counted. It was anything from, taking like a Japanese tea bowl making class, over a short term, which was kind of our like fun term where you could take one class for 1 month. So it was that I took a psychology class that was kind of specifically about, Asian psychology as opposed to Western psychology.
Cultural psychology?
Yeah. So that was again, just an interest. And it all kind of came together.
It sounds like a class that could either be like amazingly helpful or like really could degenerate into like racist stereotypes.
It tried to stay very scientific, I think.
Okay.
It was all about there are, I guess, some mental diseases and things that are specific to Japan that I was not aware of. And it was kind of that like group mentality as opposed to, individuals and
like a social psychology kind
of. It was a really great class.
This is the stuff that fascinates me, but gets me really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like on the language people use.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was actually, and this is going in a different direction, but it was kind of an interesting class for me specifically. My parents are Japanese, but I was born and raised here in the U.S. It kind of helped me realize that there are certain things about myself that are not American and it does come from my cultural background. And I think just what,
so helpful in some ways.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Okay. So that
was unrelated, but,
No, that's great.
All of that did bring me here.
That's the question. What's the relation? What's the question here?
Along the way, I was just thinking art, art history and everything that was my main goal and my interest. Asian studies was kind of a side thing that was a more personal interest, I would say. But I did write an undergrad thesis about Japanese contemporary art, and then I continued into the Sotheby's program and just went. I did further studies in Japanese contemporary art, and I kept going Japanese contemporary art, and realized along the way that everything is just so global now.
Mm-hmm.
And even our artists here, we specialize specifically in Southeast Asian contemporary, but there are amazing galleries in Japan that represent our artists. And I think there's like a lot of cross pollination in just Asia in general. So I realized that this was just as relevant a position for me, I think, as going to a specifically Japanese gallery. Along the way, this, the, everything I studied kind of brought it all together. And I, you know, the galleries I was at before weren't specifically Asian at all. They were kind of more open contemporary. But this was, this actually came about because, as I mentioned, the Asia Contemporary Art Week right. internship that I had taken up just because I was sort of interested.
Right.
And even though I didn't go on with them, the head of the program there, the director actually of Asia Contemporary Art Week, was curating a show here at Tyler Rollins. And this is, we're talking probably 5+ years later. And she remembered me and gave me a great review. And she wasn't even one of my references. So it just sort of worked out that Tyler knew her well and was able to kind of do an informal questioning, I think, about me and my background. And that was, I think that was like the clincher for me getting this position.
Wow. I'm fascinated by this whole question of globalization. And do you guys sell to primarily collectors in the States, in Europe?
It's all over.
It's everywhere.
It's really all over. Okay. And what's been really interesting here is that because we show artists based on the location where they live and work, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the subject matter or the aesthetics.
Okay.
So there might be some galleries that focus more on like abstract art, you know, or video or photography. And we have artists who work in all media. So we don't have just one type of collector, too.
Okay.
That's what ends up happening is that some galleries might attract only people who collect photography or only people who collect abstract art. And I think there aren't a lot of collectors who collect just Southeast Asian art. I mean, it's such a broad topic. So,
right.
So we work with a lot of different kinds of people.
But do tastes change with like different regions? I mean, talking about this cultural psychology thing, you know, the taste of a Japanese art collector versus the taste of a, let's say someone, you know, a Washington DC art collector.
Yeah.
That might be, you know, let's say it's Anglo-American, right? Someone, is it, I mean, it's just good art, so it sells. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Or is there like kind of a difference in aesthetic taste that you have to somehow market things differently?
I think what's also hard is that I think people, they do buy what they react to.
Uh-huh.
And it's so hard to kind of guess sometimes what people are going to love and what they're not going to like.
Right.
Especially when it comes down to not just aesthetics.
Right.
So I don't know. It really depends. It's very personal for a lot of these collectors, because they might buy sculpture and photography, and it might also be completely different subject matter.
Okay.
So it really depends, and we sell to people all over. We have a lot of collectors in the U.S. and in Europe, a lot in Asia, because all of our artists are very well established there. So the whole sort of mission of the gallery is to bring them to the U.S. and Europe, sort of more outside of Asia, mainly because they're so well represented there already.
That makes sense. So talk to me about that. You had mentioned this is kind of moving into one of our final questions. We had talked about things going on in today's art movement. And one of the things you brought up before we started recording was the move to online sales.
Yes. Yeah.
And you just made a comment just now saying that collectors are going to purchase things that they react to. And if I understood correctly, the way I interpret that is the experience for me. I go to Basel or I go to a gallery and I'll just walk around and wait for something to just grab my attention, grab me by the lapels and say, "Micah, like listen to this. I have this message. It's an emotional and a political message, there's a connection here between this piece of the work." It's like, I'm imagining I'm the piece of art speaking to myself. You know?
Right.
There's something going on in me that you need to check out, or there's something going on in you that's also going on in me. And then I kind of have an experience.
Right.
And that very much happened when I saw the Manuel Ocampo work.
Because
for those of you guys that are listening, when we met, the reason we met is because Manuel Ocampo was the solo artist that Tyler Rollins in Basel in Miami was showing, who does Philippine work that engages the history of American colonialism and expansion in the turn of the century in the Philippines, and playing even with certain ads that came out in magazines like Puck around the turn of the century that I use in my classroom to talk about American imperialism and expansion. So when he re-engaged and had reinterpretations of these old political cartoons, it hit me. And it was like, wow, this is amazing. So there was definitely that reaction. So going back, you know, full circle and boomerang back to the original point, how is it possible to then recreate these experiences with an art when the platform is now online? Is that even possible? What happens instead?
So I think with these online platforms are definitely aware of that experience, and I think they know when they're creating these things that that is an experience that people like to have with their artwork. So they've actually made it so that you get to see installation views. They also have made it so that you can create online shows. You can actually pick and choose what artwork you want to show together and like create something that's specific to just online. It might not even be something that was done at the gallery. Maybe it wasn't even at an art fair.
You curate a digital
You can curate gallery. A digital show if you want to do that too. Yeah. So I think they just to be able to have these works of art and like move them around and put them in context, they really concentrate on trying to be able to do that online as well. And I think just in terms of going back to thinking about how collectors are able to buy just off of a JPEG, I mean, this is something that's happened, you know, more recently, before even before those online sales platforms, people have started to, they're getting more comfortable just receiving images ahead of the show. And I think as people are become more familiar with the artist's work, they can also kind of understand like what it would look like physically as well.
I mean, I love it and I hate it at the same time. I'm so angry because I can't figure out if I love it or I hate it, because, you know, the accessibility is so much greater. And yet at the same time,
You get so many eyes on it, though. I mean, it took us a little while, I think, to come around to it as well. A lot of like bigger galleries can also take it on faster. I mean, it is a lot of work. I didn't realize how much work it is to have that and the upkeep and making sure everything's up to date and
just getting the pictures.
Have our own website to keep up to date as well. So this is like a whole other thing. And we also started Instagram too. I mean, everyone kept saying, you know, you're in a visual industry and everyone does this. And it hit a point where if we didn't do it, it was a little bit odd, which was the same case with this online platform, because other galleries were showing our artists on the online platform and we were the only ones maybe who didn't have, you know, we weren't representing our artists there. So it's all kind of moving in that direction, definitely. I think that I don't know, who knows what, if time goes by, like what exactly is going to happen to the physical space if people are so interested in just digital. Doing everything online.
Well, I mean, like you said at the beginning, there's so much more here that goes on than just, you know, people visiting.
But then also, I think there's a question of, you know, what's, do you need the gallery space if you're doing art fairs as well? Because you're always on the move for that. So
what does it say about the meaning of art? If we're moving away from... And what does it say that we're now curating digital spaces of digital encounters instead of physical encounters? I don't know. Be really metaphysical.
But the physical object is still there. So I think that that's key. It's definitely not, I mean, unless we're talking about photography, which, you know, once is it when you print it or is it the actual digital, you know, JPEG? But I think at the end of the day, art still has a physicality to it that is important to even just keep in mind as you're browsing online, looking at different artworks. And I think that's always going to be there. So the form itself, I think, is still, I mean, there's a physical form. And then I know you were also just sort of asking, like relating to the humanities, about the importance of the humanities to art and I guess the form. All of our artists actually just, they have such diverse backgrounds and I think bring in a lot about different histories. And we were just talking about one of our artists, Tiffany Chung, who's a Vietnamese artist, and her work is just so heavily rooted in data and statistics. She looks at a lot of the numbers of refugees. She herself is a Vietnamese refugee. So she's been doing a lot of work related to that. But her Venice Biennale presentation in 2015 was actually about the Syria crisis.
Okay.
And she was mapping the refugees and where they were going for that.
Amazing.
But it brings in, you know, different humanities, definitely. There's like different subject matter that you can pull from that. And
incredible.
She makes these really beautiful maps. And in some cases, they might be a little bit more like infographics. But right. It's all just information that I think, you know, she worked really hard to gather that data and is right. creating a really beautiful, sort of visually, easily digestible, more digestible kind
this
of
is, this
form.
Is great. This is fantastic because what's happening is that the arts, because of big data and because of technology and especially because of the humanities backgrounds
right.
of these artists, they're able to integrate in new ways
yeah.
the data with the arts
right.
and creating new forms
right.
of installation
yeah.
work or even canvas work here
yeah.
at VCU.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I don't think I know there's a group called Sub Rosa. I think it's a group of artists that talk about Mexican and North American
okay.
immigration politics. And they had an installation that I saw a while ago. That also does a lot with this. I'm thinking about that now because they also do a lot with tracking people and movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as we live in such a globalized world, a neoliberal world where
right.
trade barriers are continually
yeah.
being torn apart, we have more people movement and we have more and more commodity movement.
Mm-hmm.
And that's incredible. Now we're seeing that engaged and dialogued with in the arts itself.
Yeah.
You said Tiffany Chung.
Tiffany Chung, yeah.
Has Tiffany Chung done anything that actually jumps off of the canvas too?
She's done installation work, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, she actually even did a full light box installation that was also related to Syria. It was actually, she used these images of the city of Homs after it was bombed.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, created these little light boxes. There were about 30, I think it was 31 light boxes, and they all light up. And they almost look like a little village, and she created this kind of installation. Yeah.
Okay.
So she's done different kinds of work. The map work she's very well known for, but
okay.
she's done in the past video and photography as well. A lot of our artists actually do work in different media, not just in one. So
fantastic. So, okay, can we look up Tiffany Chung's work on, because you were telling me that Tyler Rollins now has a site on Artsy? Or
we do, yeah, Artsy is one that we do, but I mean, our website has a really great
okay.
archive of images of all the past work for our artists and
right.
different sort of like press articles.
Okay, and it's Tyler Rollins Fine Art.
It's
what is
trfineart.com.
trfineart.com. Okay,
yeah.
Listeners. Check that out. Check out Tiffany Chung's work and realize the connections between humanities. Yeah. That's great. Okay, let's bring it back to the students. If we have, imagine we have some people listening to the podcast,
yeah.
stuck in traffic on the 836 in Miami, frustrated with their life, but they're really thankful for this podcast and they want to be, you know, they want to have a position similar to yours, or they want to be engaged with, even if it's not on the sales aspect, they want to be engaged in, you know, an Art Basel, or want to be engaged
right.
in kind of gallery work, or even in the creation and production of art. What is some advice that you might have for those listeners that, imagine, they're a junior, they graduate in
yeah.
a year, they don't have a lot of experience. What are some things that you might say they could do to get their hands already in gear
yeah.
right now?
I mean, like I said, I did a million internships, really just to figure out what it is I wanted to do. And
so
I think
it's okay to work for free.
Well, I was lucky enough to be sort of financially
okay.
Supported
okay.
enough to do that, especially in New York.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think internships are a really great way, even if it's before you even start looking for a job. I mean, you could be doing it while you're in school.
Right.
I did do internships while I was in college too at different museums.
Okay.
So I think it's really important. I found it really important to just know what I didn't want to do
okay.
as well.
Which is
just to rule out, you know, like I said, when I was doing the nonprofit thing and I felt like I didn't really want to go in that direction, then at least you can kind of stop searching for positions
okay.
in nonprofit if that's, you definitely know that you don't want to do that. Or I also felt like museums were a little bit too academic for me, and that wasn't the direction I wanted to go in. And I had done two museum internships while I was still in college
okay.
And really enjoyed it. But it seemed that, you know, I had spoken with a lot of the curators at the time, and they were saying, you know, you continued education, it keeps going, and it takes forever to become a full curator at these museums. It's a really impressive job. But it wasn't really the direction I wanted to take. And so I knew that, and I stopped kind of pursuing that direction. And it sort of led me in the right, I think it sort of guided my decisions later on too. So I do think it's important to try, even if you're confused and don't know what you want to try something that might be even slightly interesting.
Right.
And then if you realize, if you come to realize that that's not what you want to do, then go in a different direction.
And how did you find these? Did you just cold call people? Did you go up to galleries?
It was a mixture. There were some sort of people I knew already in the industry who told me someone was looking for an intern. There's a really great website for New York that's NYFA. I think it's NYFA.org.
Oh, New York Fine Arts. NYFA.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
So they actually have job listings, and we even post our internship listings on there.
Amazing.
So it's a really great resource for, honestly, even for jobs. But there are a lot of great internships, too. A lot of these jobs, they look for experience. That was the problem, is that they look for experience already. So sometimes it kind of requires you to have to do a bit of unpaid work beforehand. But it's actually been a really great, we've had interns here as well. We do a kind of program here where we bring in interns for different semesters, and it's kind of nice to kind of give back, because I remember really appreciating the experiences I had and kind of being able to do a lot of hands-on work. And especially at a small gallery like this, we rely so heavily on our interns that it's been nice to see different people come through and really appreciate what we do with them here.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, so making the connections, at times doing the unpaid work, especially in the beginning, rack up that experience a little bit, and then just, and probably, and just, you know, being a hard worker and have a good eye.
And you never know, you just never know what connection is going to take you to the next thing. And not only did this job come from a former internship, my other job did as well, because I was actually working at a gallery that showed an artist who got picked up by this other gallery where the woman actually had gone to Bates College as well. And this artist was nice enough to remember that and mention that, oh, there's this girl interning here who went to the same college as you. Like, would you be interested in speaking with her? And that was sort of the initial connection to how I got my first job, too.
It's all relationships.
Yeah,
Everything is relationships.
So I think being open to everything and being open to meeting new people, and it'll take you in the right direction, I think.
This is amazing. Issa, you have been an incredible guest on the show.
Oh, this was so much fun. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for the conversation. I don't know if you have any final things you want to say.
No, I think this was
perfect.
Good conversation.
All right, well, guys, thanks so much for tuning in today. And this has been Issa Abe, Tyler Rowland's Fine Art in New York City, live. We are here in the gallery wishing you a great afternoon, a great evening. Thank you so much.